Please, as a disciple of Yahshua, please pour your grace upon me and everybody listening to me. For every morsel of truth that might be found in this material, let it go deep into our hearts and bear good fruit. And let every error fall to the ground. We commit the Sabbath, the baptisms, our worship, our material, taking on too much. I came to the conclusion that I had taken on too much. Brothers and sisters, I'm Brother Michael Bannock of Fulton, Missouri. All the grace of Yahshua be with you. I'm so enormously grateful to my friends in the fellowship and others who helped me get through the meditations on this thing. So let's get right to it. When I ask people to tell me when they know they have taken on too much, how do you know? How can you tell? Most of them have answered anxiety. I've taken on too much, a deep rooted sense of anxiety. That's a good start. Anxiety is certainly important to watch for, but it is difficult to measure. There's other shortcomings with using anxiety as a barometer that you've taken on too much. Every now and then I'm going to inject a scripture, because this is a biblically based study. In Matthew 11, verse 28 to 30, Yahshua of Nazareth says, "Come unto me, all ye that labor and are heavily laden, and I will give you rest. Take my yoke upon you and learn of me, for I am meek and lowly in heart, and you shall find rest unto your souls. For my yoke is easy and my burden is light." If you're not careful, you look at that and think, oh, I just have to come to Yahshua and everything will be okay. That's what it looks like, doesn't it? But so often, Yahshua tells you the secret. And if you look there at the lines that I've underlined and highlighted, he's telling you how to find that rest. Take my yoke upon you and learn of me, for I am meek and lowly in heart. And when we take on that mind of Messiah, it's easier for us to figure out what burdens we should take and which ones we should not. To lower our expectations of ourselves, to lower the demands we put on others. Let us press on. I'm going to talk about some dimensions of life. These are areas where you can measure where you have taken on too much. These are attributes of life, dimensions of life, characteristics of life. One of them is time. We all move and operate in time. Another one is our health. What is the state of our bodies? How about that action item list, that to-do list that's always staring us in the eye? These are dimensions of life in which you can study and take notes and start to measure whether you've taken on too much. How about relationships? That's a big one. We're going to talk a lot about that. How about your devotional life? Because Yahweh does not normally stare you in the eye. He doesn't tug at you, your clothes. Often your devotional life suffers. He's likely giving you spiritual promptings inside. But your devotional life is another dimension of your life, another attribute of your life. How about your assets and possessions? Those are things you can measure and count, tabulate, and take inventory of. Your finances, too. You can look across the landscape of your finances and get a sense of whether you've taken on too much. How about where you're at from hour to hour? Where are you located? Where do you spend your time? And then there's the speed at which you're moving. There's many, many other areas and dimensions and ways of assessing where you're at and whether you're in the habit of taking on too much. Today's hip, modern, go-go American is in blowout mode. Sleep deprivation is a plague on the land. Before I go forward, I'm convinced that one of the reasons is because technology gives us the impression that we're creating a lot and getting a lot done. Today with technology, everybody's voice gets amplified. Every booklet can be mass-produced a million times and dropped from helicopters. Let's talk about measurable symptoms of taking on too much. Again, there's probably more, but these are the big ones that stood out at me. Missed appointments. The next two are pretty big. Failed commitments to Yahweh, family, friends, and customers. In other words, those people you serve. Then there's neglected duty to family, friends, and Yahweh, and customers. These are things you can write down. It's one thing to say, I feel anxiety. I feel resentment. But you can, if you can start to tabulate these things, now there's something you can monitor. There's strained relationships. There's conflicts. I want to bring to remembrance James chapter 4, 1 to 3, where Yahweh reveals that all conflicts are because of desire. Every conflict on this planet comes from desire. Every one, every single one. Well, here's how it works. Somebody wants something, and somebody affected by that desire raises a flag. Says, hold on, hold on a minute. Somebody over here wants to move a new fence 6 inches onto your property. You're going to say, wait a minute. Sometimes people want something to not be so, and they'll work very hard to make something not so, such as this censorship wave that's been sweeping the world right now. All conflicts come from desires. How many conflicts do you have? Sometimes the one with the desire is wrong. Sometimes the one raising the flag is wrong. Debts. The Bible says so much about debts. Oh my gosh. Debt, that's going to take the country down. It's going to take the world down. Debts upon debts. Sleep deprivation. There's a big one. Divided loyalties. With a conflict between where, you know, where your time and energy should go. Sometimes you can get in a trap where you're serving people in two different theaters of activity in your life, and they don't like each other as much as you like them. Poor health, that's another thing to watch for if you've taken on too much. Increased temptation, that should sound alarms. Junk in storage. You know, when I was moving around that stuff for my elderly friend, Sister Lucille, I remember moving that stuff around and thinking, you know, there's a lot of storage centers around America, an awful lot of them. U-Haul, public storage, Life Storage, other places. Then there's these ma-and-pa storage centers, you know. There's a lot of that going on. More sin. There's a lot of sin in your life. By definition, you're wasting your time. Sin is a waste of time. If you take sin into your life, by definition, you've taken on too much. Forgetfulness. I don't blame people for forgetfulness, but if you've taken on too much, you're going to have a hard time keeping track of everything. And it gets to rushing, like when you're in too much of a hurry, speeding tickets, things like that. Some of these work together. Now, I'm going to give you an example. stayed up too late, drove continuously through Vandalia up north. Now, I got a ticket around 2 in the morning. I got a ticket for blowing through a stop sign in Vandalia. Maybe some of you know what that intersection is. You know, now it's funny, the speed limit, when you're at a stop sign, the speed limit is 0. So I was rushing, law breaking, sleep deprivation. You get the picture? I took on too much. And so I was in a state, I should have put toothpicks in my eyes to keep them open. I was so tired. I pulled over to that Shell gasoline station up there and took a power nap. See, some of these things play together with each other, don't they? You know, I stopped doing that after that incident. I do take a lot of naps on the road now. Perhaps we'll have more about it later. Here's another scripture dose, taking on too much. Boy, this one really means a lot to me. You know about the parable of the talents? Here we go. At the conclusion of the parable, Yahshua says to the successful guys, "Well done, good and faithful servant. Thou hast been faithful over a few things. I will make thee ruler over many things. Enter thou into the joy of thy master." Now, what you see that illustration there is two of the guys going to their master and giving a good account of themselves. Way in the distance, off to the right, you'll see a guy outside trying to figure out where he buried his one talent. See him out there? I'd like to underscore a key. Again, Yahshua's teachings have embedded in them a lot of great secrets. Thou hast been faithful over a few things. Yahshua of Nazareth had a number of key objectives in this great mission he was given by his father. One of them was to never sin. The first key to stopping sin in your life is to make Yahweh your top priority. Make that your top priority. And you'll find in this presentation, sin is like the thing I'm most concerned about. If you're faithful over a few things, that's all you need. Just got to be faithful over a few things. Oh, I can't resist. Yeah, in the commercial world, the business world, there's this thing called ISO 9000 certification. And these ISO certifiers come in, and all they do is verify that you did what you said you're going to do. That's all it. You could put your instructions, your corporate instructions, on a 3x5 card. And ISO comes in and just says, okay, did you do what's on that piece of paper? But what happens is a lot of these companies want to impress the ISO 9000 auditors. They come with jumbo notebooks full of procedures and action items and all this. And they're just trying to impress an ISO auditor. When all they could have just put it in one memo or something. Thanks so much, Brother Javon, for bringing me this water. So who are you trying to impress with all your big plans? Huh? Yahshua says, you have been faithful over a few things. Talk a little more about that. You know, there were in the book of Acts, Peter healed some lame guy who was begging at the temple for many years. It appears that Yahshua walked right by that guy. Just walked right by him. Even if that fellow wasn't at the temple all the time, Yahshua never got around to healing him because there was lots of people to heal. There was lots more people to be evangelized. That was not Yahshua's job. And as he prayed there that last night before he was arrested, he said, "Father, I finished the work you gave me to do." There's a lot more to do, but it wasn't his job. And there's a lot of situations where it's not my job. You've been faithful over a few things. That's all we're required to do is a few things. You take on too much, you're going to have more sin in your life. Let me talk a little bit about this business of anxiety, because it kept coming up. And I found myself pushing back on it because I saw limitations in there. Anxiety is a marker for so many things. Some people will also mention resentment. You took on too much and you start to resent the people you're serving. But you know, it is possible that resentment and anxiety are areas of your life requiring more discipline. It is possible to have anxiety and resentment for things you are supposed to do. And this is why I reject worldly philosophies on this topic. Because they'll tell you, the worldly philosophers will tell you, oh, you feel anxiety. Oh, you feel resentment. You took on too much. No, there's times when you have to take on a task that Yahweh's assigned you, and you feel anxiety and maybe resentment sometimes. And there's something there maybe you got to let go of. On the other hand, some of you have learned to ignore anxiety and resentment. You just turned your feelings off because you've been so worn out. There was a great mom and a lovely couple and the kids that used to come to our feasts. I remember that mom telling me, oh, she got into the habit of pushing the overdrive button. Come on, moms, how many of you have been in the habit of pushing the overdrive button? Come on, I'm looking you in the eye. How many of you moms push the overdrive button? Because you're being called on to do something. So you start to ignore your feelings. It doesn't matter how I feel. My kids need me. My child is sick tonight. I've got to fulfill that promise. So if you're in the habit of pushing the overdrive button, the anxiety feelings ain't going to help you one way or the other. But it is best to use your feelings as simply an alert system and focus on those measurable things that I've noted earlier in those that list above, you know, earlier. If you look at those measurable things, you get a real crisp view of whether or not you're taking on too much. Again, your feelings can just propel you to look closer at this list of measurables. Missed appointments, failed commitments, sacred duty, strained relationships, sin, debt, poor health, all that stuff. These are things you can measure. I've highlighted several of them because they are either sins or they border on sin. Missed appointments, failed commitments, neglected duty, conflicts. These are things that are either sin or they border on sin or they're evidence of sin. Debts are a big one. If somebody's sleep deprived, there may be a good reason for that. We heard on Passover night, Matthew 26:40, where Yahshua tells the boys, hey, you, why can't you watch with me for an hour tonight? There's at least one instance where Yahshua prayed on a hill all night long. You might be up all night with a sick child. So sleep deprivation isn't necessarily a tip-off that you're sinning. On the other hand, our friend Lincoln has pointed out to me that the human species is the only animal on the planet that will deprive themselves of sleep for no good reason at all. Think about that. Are there times we've stayed up too late because of something we wanted? Here's something to put on your refrigerator. You will never get in trouble seeking what you need. You'll never get in trouble doing what you're supposed to do. But you will get in trouble pursuing what you want. Yeah, you'll never get in trouble doing the right thing or doing what you're supposed to do, seeking your needs. If you're chasing something you want, you can get in trouble for that. Divided loyalties can be sinful, increased temptation. Surely that's a red alarm, red alert. Junk in storage. We have so many commands in the New Covenant writings against storage. Having junk. Excessive possessions. Come on, guys, let's do a reset on this. Let's be honest with yourself. We have a brother in the faith. He had to fly back to Washington to settle an estate upon the death of a distant relative. He came back pale. Brother, Mike, they had 2.5 trucks full of junk. We had to sort out all that junk. 2.5 big old moving vans, like where the it was like sitting there for years. Some of you have driven through the country. You've seen these houses would have like 3 and 4 rusty cars piled up out back. Yeah, the junk, the chair with 3 legs, the pictures without frames, the frames without pictures, the curtain rods, all that stuff. Ugh. Sin. Sin in itself is sin. Law-breaking, rushing. I'm not going to blame people for forgetfulness, but you can see how many of these measurable symptoms of taking on too much, they are either sin in of themselves or they border on sin. Let's take another scripture. Proverbs 19, verse 2, he that hasteth with his feet sinneth. It speaks to the last item on the list, rushing. Here we have an image of a multi-vehicle pileup in, I think it's England, because you can see they're driving on the wrong side of the road. Okay. But somebody was in a hurry. Look out, here I come. Somebody was in a hurry. We just had an accident in St. Louis involving some of the saints. Somebody was in a hurry. Not our members, okay, but he that hasteth with his feet sinneth. If you're in a hurry, check what's going on there. There's times you should be in a hurry. You get over and you let that police car go by. You let that ambulance go by. But if you're always in a hurry, that's sin. By the way, Lincoln has given me information stating that sleep-deprived drowsy driving kills more people than being under the influence of drugs or alcohol. Now you can see why that incident in Vandalia meant so much to me. It's like, I went through a stop sign. I could have gone through a person. Okay, we're going to look at some case studies on how to fail. Get ready, fasten your seatbelts. These are recipes for failure. You want to take on too much? You're bored? You want some action in your life? Something that'll engulf you? Case number one is to sin. By definition, when you sin, you take on too much. Sin is such a time waster. I've come to hate sin with a perfect hatred. If you find sin within you, rapidly repent of it, whatever it takes. It's the battle of a lifetime, but it's worth it. It ruins you, it ruins the people around you. This is primarily what concerns me today. Really, I don't care what you do with your life, as long as you don't sin. Rip and run, have a big time, okay? But sin means, if you commit sin, that means you've done naughty things that you're not supposed to do, or you fail to do good things that you're commanded to do. If you stop sinning, the world is a better place. Here's another formula for failure, is to start big. Everything Yahweh does, he starts small. The parable of the mustard seed, starting with one lump of leavening to leaven a whole loaf, that's the good parable. There's the bad parable too, but that's the good one. Yahweh starts small. Yahweh starts with families. Abraham, Sarah, and Isaac, Yahweh always starts small, and he grows from there. Everything's that way. If you want to fail, take on too much, flip that formula on its head and start big instead of small. This is a big one to me. Formula for failure, taking on too much. Case study number three, seek marriage without preparation. Yeah, just like that song from the 60s, you know I'm hung up on you. I have had it with people entering to marriage and are not ready. They don't know what they're doing. Just sickens me. Messianic marriage, the only kind there should be, is not based on what you're going to get. It's based on what you can give. And so many times we see young people swept away by emotion, feelings. They have no idea. They have no idea what they're getting into. So now I got to give some serious talk power to this. And I often summon a metaphor I came up with. I call it the road to Kankakee. If you're in South Chicago, there's a major highway that commences there, Interstate 57. It takes you to Kankakee, Illinois. Everybody who gets on Interstate 57 winds up in Kankakee. It's the road to Kankakee. I know there's going to be a lot of redundancy and tautology here. Everybody who gets on the road to Kankakee comes back and says, you know, I went on the road to Kankakee and Kankakee is down there. Nobody gets on the road to Kankakee and says, you know, I went down to Kankakee and the road to Kankakee and Kankakee isn't there. Now, you get on the road to Kankakee, everybody comes back and says, Kankakee is there. Everybody who enters into courtship, betrothal, and marriage, everybody tells me the same thing. I've never heard an exception. They all tell me that the relationship starts out with a lot of excitement and neon lights and explosions and things, but it cools down. It cools down. And then when that happens, you have to have a real relationship, a real friendship to base your life on together. And that period of excitement and intimacy, you're supposed to use that to build sentiment, common values, common objectives. You might create new interests together. But all too often, we have people who won't listen. And so they're lifted by a hot air balloon into the clouds. And when that helium loses its punch and the hot air cools down, they come down to earth and they say, well, wait a minute, what happened to that ride we were on? Well, while you were up there in the clouds, you should have been making long-term plans, commitments, and muster the resources to keep those commitments. One thing that really irks me is when I see men go down the path of cowardice. Very few men, it seems, have the courage to go to a girl's parents and say, I've been praying about this. I see possibilities for your daughter and me. What could I do to qualify to seek her hand in marriage? Coach me on this. I'd like to know what you say about this. No, most men don't have the guts to do that. They don't have the guts for the self-examination. Of course, they're going to have to muster a ton of courage when they enter marriage for life. They're going to have to summon character qualities they didn't know existed. You know what they'd rather do, so many men? They'd rather trifle with a girl's feelings behind the scenes, behind the parents' back. Woe to the man who dares to defile a daughter of Abraham. You don't know what burning coals of fiery hell you've inherited. Yeah, I'm hung up on people who go into marriage unprepared. Those of you who are parents, you've got to teach your children how to get ready for marriage. Think about it. We have 8 years of primary school, 4 years of secondary school, anywhere from 1 to 4 years of professional training, depending on whether it's a trade or a degreed profession, sometimes postgraduate school. All this stuff about how to make a buck, how to get by in life. Where's the training for marriage? You know what we see? Instead of adequate training for marriage, what we're seeing is marriage seminars. You know, Band-Aid, first aid kind of seminars. How to fix this thing we made. I'm begging you parents, teach your children what the husbands and wives can expect in a marriage, what they can give in a marriage. It is such a beautiful thing when it is adequately structured. It is paradise on earth. And those who approach it responsibly, with the head using their head, rather than being sneaky or selfish, those who approach it right, they report often falling in love several times in the course of their life, over and over again. It's absolutely wonderful to engage the soul and spirit of another person, to find out their faults and realize you still love them anyway. I'm going to take you down a journey, because I got to slam this one home. How many of you have ever heard of Jacqueline Suburido? She's from South America. Did you hear of her? You ever heard of her? Nope. Okay. Jacqueline Suburido. She's a real cute girl, isn't she? Lovely lady. Lovely smile. Engaging. Full of life. She became a crusader against drunk driving. She's a fun gal. Sweet and beautiful. Full of life. A whole life ahead of her. You think you could love her? You know, I showed this to a... There's a lot more pictures of her on the internet about 15 years ago. You can look her up today if you wish. This is just a lovely lady. This is a lesson in divine love. Do you think you could like her? Would you like to meet her? Would you like to get her phone number? Better yet, would you like to talk to her parents? Could you love her through hard times? Really? Really? Poor Jacqueline, her car one night was T-boned by a drunk driver. And after dozens of surgeries and dozens of skin grafts, this is what became of her. Could you love someone who looked like that? I'm convinced I could. Because when you understand messianic love, you are thoroughly absorbed with that person inside. She was doing blogs about 10, 15 years ago. She tried to go to a nightclub with some girlfriends just to have a good night out with her friends. They wouldn't let her in the nightclub. because of how she looked. Are you willing to love somebody through hard times? If you're not, you're not ready for marriage. And those of you who are parents must train your kids that hard times are going to come. And it's so much easier and survivable. In fact, it's almost a fun adventure if you put your mind to knifing your way through hard times, no matter what. Well, Jacqueline Subarito is a champion of mine. She became a crusader against drunk driving. You'll find her on YouTube and other places. So yeah, you want to fail big time? Go into marriage unprepared, floating on your cheap feelings. You find out that there really is nothing there. It's going to break your heart, and you're going to die a thousand deaths. And woe to the man who trifles with the daughters of Abraham. Here's another case study on how to fail big time, to take on too much. Enter ministry without qualifications. Several years ago, I carved out some time to study the story of Amy Semple McPherson. That's the creepy lady there in the upper right-hand corner. Man, what a weird piece of work. She flourished about 100 years ago in the Los Angeles area. I would say, I know she should not be in official ministry because she's a woman, we know that, but I mean, her life was a train wreck. Three marriages, scandal, all kinds of bad things. She just had no business being there. I thought that would be a fitting icon for some of the ministries that I have seen over the years. I'll be careful what I say now. I beg you to trust me. But suppose I could describe to you a fellow who gets baptized and married at the same time. And then a few months later, maybe he gets hands laid on him to go into ministry, whatever that is. And then he gets a web page and he's got money coming in. And while all this is going on, his wife is neglected. His children are out of order. There's all kinds of scandals in the background. Now, the scriptures say, 1 Timothy 3 and Titus chapter 1 say, you can't go into ministry unless you're qualified. And that includes having your home in order. But no, this joker, he's just ripping and running. Now, I don't have to name names because this is actually a common scenario. I made friends with a group up in Wisconsin. They called themselves, I don't like the name, but they called themselves the Church at Appleton. Just lovely people, most beliefs like us. And one guy was at seminary. He said he left the seminary. But he said that he was shocked at how many people were in seminary. They claimed they were seeking to go into ministry because they found they couldn't hold down a job. A hush falls over the room. Get this. I can't seem to hold down a job. I guess I should go into ministry. Now, how's a knucklehead like that going to relate to you and I who are struggling to hold down a job? There's people like that out there. Yahshua says you should focus on the lost sheep. Forget the 99. If you're married, men, your primary ministry is your wife. That's your primary ministry. And if your wife is crying out for attention, you've taken on too much. Some of these jokers, they'll take the one lamb, chop her up in a lot of pieces, and feed her to the other 99. Yahshua said, let the little children come to me. He said, you offend one of these little ones, you got a punishment coming to you that's worse than being drowned with a rock around your neck. You look across the world of religiosity. You don't have to look too far. You look around the world of religiosity. You'll find ministers whose kids hate Yahweh. Yahweh took my daddy away from me. You'll find estranged wives who say, Yahweh took my husband away from me. We can't have that. Yahshua's already told you, go for the one. Don't worry about the 99. You go for that one. And I have seen, we've seen it in the news, in the magazines. Enter ministry without qualifications, such as having your home in order. That'll be taken on too much. And boy, has it been heartbreaking. This one, I'm really wound up on this one too. Another case study, taking on too much. Get greedy in divine service. Let's talk about some of these characters. Over to the right, you see an illustration of Judas hanging himself. He was an example of someone in divine service. In the book of John, it says that he was the treasurer, and he did play a major role in dispensing funds to the poor. But it also says he helped himself to the bag. He got greedy. Gehazi, not too many people know about Gehazi. Okay, here's the pattern in the Bible. Observant Bible students will tell you that the assistant to a prophet is the next in line. For example, Elisha was the assistant to Elijah. When Elijah was taken away, Elisha stepped up and he was the next prophet. In fact, he had a double portion of the Spirit. Well, Elisha's assistant was a guy named Gehazi. In one famous incident, Naaman the leper was healed by Elisha. And Naaman tried to give him money for it. And Elisha says, no, we don't do that. We don't do that. And so when Naaman was headed back to Syria, Gehazi got greedy. And he chased him down and he lied. He said, listen, you offered to give us money. It turns out something came up and we need some cash. And Gehazi took money from Naaman for this miracle that Elisha performed. You know, Elisha found out. He rebuked and scolded Gehazi, and Gehazi was smitten with leprosy all his life. And they're the sons of Eli. You can read about them there in 1 Samuel. Totally corrupted the ministry in Shiloh. It was so bad, Yahweh had to move everything to Jerusalem. But how about you? There are times when you will find yourself in divine service. It doesn't have to be official ministry. You can find yourself in divine service, and you blend that with some selfish motives. Some of you may have heard, I got qualified for some kind of government program where I can serve as a personal aide to people. And they don't pay much, but I can serve as a personal aide to people. But I had to take some training. And I was shocked at some of the ridiculous stuff in the training manuals. You are not to help yourself to the patient's money. Why would? Evidently, they do this. They'll say, hey, let me take you out to dinner. And then they use that person's personal money. Some of the things they warn us about in that literature are unspeakable. Why would people do that? This is clearly doing good to others, but they get greedy. I remember my dear mom got a jumper on her car stalled. She got a jump out there in traffic in Chicago, and it was a cold day, and some guy jumped the car. This is so painful. I'll be careful what I say now. I wish there was some way I could thank you. And then he said something so ugly that Mom couldn't even tell me. She didn't even want to tell me. I wouldn't tell you anyway, I suppose, but she burst into tears, shrieked. I wasn't there, okay? She told me later. She shrieked with horror, burst into tears. It must have been very powerful because the guy profusely apologized for what he said. Here was this sweet, beautiful transaction between two strangers. Surely the angels are going to take note of this. And he spoils the whole thing by trying to get something selfish out of it. You want to take on too much. You turn divine service into something selfish. You will inherit the whirlwind. Just like good old Judas, Gehazi, and Eli's sons. This one will go quick. Another recipe for disaster is to get addicted to frenzy. I'm really grateful for one of the sisters bringing this to my attention because I've had this feeling too on occasion where the hectic pace of life slows down and I say, hey, it's a little too quiet here. Watch that. If you feel uncomfortable in a quiet place, it may be that you're addicted to all those hormones that keep you going. Here's another way of taking on too much. Skip sleep. Skip sleep. Psalm 127, verse 2, it is vain for you to rise up early, to sit up late, to eat the bread of sorrows, for so he giveth his beloved sleep. I've already talked about the times and situations where you will have to skip sleep. But if you're taking pills and you're starting to hit some of those other metrics of failure, you've taken on too much. Case study number 8, another way to take on too much. Start a finance ministry. Now, what am I talking about there? Well, there's an ATM machine, and I've edited it a little bit, put mom and dad across the top, because I have a lot of moms and dads telling me that they've become ATM machines for their kids. You know? Here's what I'm getting at. I've been talking this up a lot lately, and I have reason to believe there are more people involved in this than I thought, where they're loaning money to people to help them out. Now, after a while, you start to wonder, golly, the same people, same problems, what's going on here? Now, I've got one solution. I'll just tell you, I'll try to be brief. But, I mean, just about anybody can find $10 and $20 bills to help somebody. But if you enter into 3 digits, I'm telling people now, hey, you're coming to me and ask me for 3 digits worth of money. You got a serious problem here. I want to see a year's worth of bank statements, credit card statements, utility bills, and phone bills. Think about it. If you're making your problem my problem, can't I be part of the solution? See, there's a lot of ways to get in trouble today that you didn't have in Yahshua's time. He says, you know, lend freely, give freely, all that. But there's a lot of ways for people to get in trouble. And if you're subscribed to Amazon Prime, but you can't pay your rent, there's a problem there. And don't tell me, oh, Brother Mike, I save a lot of money with Amazon Prime. Amazon Prime is just a way to save money to buy more, you know? So I'll have to see what your priorities are. Because I think if we take a close look at your bank statements, your credit card statements, your utility bills, your phone bills, we will find evidence that you took on too much. Now, you might have a better way to manage this stuff. But if you want to take on too much yourself, just turn into a finance ministry of yourself. I have experienced parents who are resentful. They have entered into a state of resentment that the kids are leaning on them too much. Let me get number 9. I didn't put it on the slides. Number 9. This is going to go quick, but it's powerful. Number 9 is to take upon yourself authority that you have not earned. There's that famous line from the Ten Commandments where Moses, the adopted son of Pharaoh, he's been accused of trying to take the throne by force. And Pharaoh said he shows up and he sees Moses has been working furiously to bring honor to his dad. And Pharaoh says, who would take by force a throne that he earned by deeds? It's a powerful line. It's unforgettable, actually. But this is a problem we have today. We have a whole lot of people who got authority without earning it. The authority was conferred rather than earned. Yahshua gave the apostles the authority to cast out unclean spirits. What did they do to earn that authority? Well, they were his disciples, his closest disciples. I'm very concerned today we have a whole heap of people in positions of authority. They haven't earned the authority. It was just conferred upon them. And if you want to take on too much, you take authority for something you haven't earned, such as a marriage for which you're not prepared. Let's go on. It's taking control now. We're going back to remediation. Some steps you can do to remediate. Now, some of this is going to get a little rough. I'm on step number 1, but if I can invoke a step 0, go back to all those failed case studies and do the opposite. Okay, the ones I talked about, recipes for failure, just do the opposite. Okay, to get control, if you've taken on too much. Number 1, prepare for surgery. This is an image of a surgery done in the 1700s. You see that guy screaming there? There's going to be some pain. Prepare for surgery. Number 2, this is rough. Remember that list of symptoms I showed you? I want to focus on the things near the top, or the things that should be near the top. Ask your family to recount broken promises. That's right. Get some paper, some pens, maybe a clipboard. Sit down with everybody to whom you are accountable. Say, where have I gone wrong? Where have I failed you? Where have I broken promises, broken commitments, failed in my sacred duty? Be prepared to write fast. You'll be shocked. Your kids will remember things from a decade ago. Come on, you want to take on too much? Want to just keep on going? Sleep deprived? Slipping and sliding? Or you want to fix things? You always given unto us the ministry of reconciliation. You shall turn the hearts of fathers to children and children to fathers. Sit down and engage your kids, your wife. Well, the wife's got to do some of this too now, going in the other direction. Even your parents. A common problem in America is the kids get together and they say, Mom, Dad, Mom or Dad, it's getting real hard to meet your needs. If you would live in that home or that institution down the road, we'll come see you a lot. And then they don't come around at all. What's your priority? Oh, yeah, the image up there. It's from a silent movie from 1921 called The Kid. That book there is labeled The Past. Yeah, don't give me no jalopy jive about I don't want to live in the past. No, you're going to have to go back and fix things. You're going to have to go back and rebuild. In an image from the same movie, this book is open about the past, and it has a page called Regrets. Yeah, apologize profusely, and don't even think of tossing up whining excuses. I hear you. I blew it. I want to find a way around this stuff to rebuild and fix this. Don't give up whining excuses. Well, I was tired. or I forgot. The ministry of reconciliation requires us to rebuild. Here's another thing about getting control. I'm going to spend a little time talking about Claude Shannon's theorem. Theorem on communication. I'm going to talk about communication pipes to illustrate. When I say communication pipes, I mean cable lines, fiber optic lines, telephone lines, DSL, any communication pipe. You can actually characterize its capacity for information. Some can handle a lot, some can handle a little. There's a mathematical model verifying what we see in real life. If you have a communication pipe squirting information through, and then you exceed how much it can handle, you would think the communication is degraded a little bit. Oh, some of the information's lost here and there. No, when you cross the threshold of what it can handle, communication stops completely. Total shutdown. Nothing gets through. What happens is the information gets through, but it's all garbled. You can't make it out. The communication ceases completely. Now, there's several versions of Shannon's theorem. He has a lot of auxiliary theorems, but this is a down-to-earth way to explain it, and it has been stated this way before by others. So if you go try to look up Shannon's theorem, the language may elude you because you don't have the scientific background. But that's the fact of the matter. You exceed it. I know some of you have electronics training. Maybe you've heard of Nyquist sampling criteria. If you exceed that. Well, your nervous system is and your brain work the same way. The folly of multitasking it sometimes it amazes me. Studies have been done at this that show that multitasking does not improve productivity. And this has happened sometimes. I think every one of the adults here could say that they know what it's like at the end of the day to be a blithering fool. You don't know what, you can't even make sense of anything because your brain is so cluttered with too much going in. Yeah, people know how much I've come to resent technology, and here I work on it. Text message, alarms go off, phone rings, email, somebody's knocking on the door. Some days it never ends. I don't know how your moms do it. I'm convinced that you're, they call it, in computer architecture, they call it interrupt stack space, where a computer's working on a routine, then an interrupt call comes over. It has to interrupt and take care of something else. So it takes all that information about what it's working on, puts it on what's called a stack, and it'll do what's called an interrupt service routine. But that might be interrupted with something else. So it'll take that job and put it also on the stack. And you can start stacking up multiple tasks. And if there's not enough stack space, you get what's called a stack overflow. Maybe you've seen a computer screen that says that, stack overflow. That's what's going on. Too many interruptions. Now, modern computers don't do that much anymore. They're more powerful, they have more stack space, and they have multiple processing cores. But we're only human. And I can only handle so many interruptions. I can only be pulled in so many directions at the same time. If you cross the line, everything's going to shut down. You're not going to be good for anybody. Saw a recent study that said if you work continuously, the shutoff point is about 7.2 hours. Without a break, about 7.2 hours. And after that, you're not getting anything done. So now that we've talked about Shannon's criteria, his theorem, get control number three, reduce media stimuli, whether it's these crazy video games, audio stimulation. I don't know why everybody's running around with headphones today. I don't get that. But, you know, I'd rather know what's going on around me. Or you want to watch a lot of movies with explosions and fireballs. This stuff, as it's pouring into your soul, it's cluttering the communication pipes of your nervous system. Get control number four. Get rid of all that junk. Yeah, we're almost done here. Get rid of all that junk. There's an image of a garage sale. Tried to come to terms with the fact that I have two medium-sized storage centers. One has the assets from my land surveying business, and the other has the assets from my electronics business. And it's understandable that winding down a business is kind of messy. And I suppose I could feel, well, look, I am chipping away at it. I am getting rid of it. But there's more. There's also stuff there from people who have passed through my life with their junk. People who have passed through, some of them have died. Some of them moved on. Some have disappeared. So on one hand, I feel like, well, maybe I'm a little justified because it really isn't all my fault. You know, I'm just mopping up from a couple of businesses. They have paid me well. I have no complaints. These relationships, though, relationships in which people have foisted their stuff on me. It didn't start out that way. It just wound up that way. I don't think that's so justified because I'm beginning to wonder if those relationships were mismanaged. And when it comes to taking on too much, I will take that stuff as an indicator that I was mismanaging the relationships. This brings me to number five, taking on too much. Another remedy is to confine yourself to manageable relationships. As I can look back and I can see times when I've engaged people and they were not governed by the laws of heaven. They did not have the same master I did. Now, where I'm at in my life, I've got all my siblings and my cousins were all at peace. It's very satisfying. Out of them, one sister is in the covenant and her husband. Great. We're all at peace. The great apostle to the Gentiles said, if you're married and you come into the covenant and your spouse is willing to live with you in peace, then you let that ride. That's a good thing. So on that basis, I'm grandfathering relationships I already have with people who are at peace with me. I have two good friends who are not in the covenant. They show enormous respect for my devotional life. If that ever changes, I have to change. I have to change some things. But I look back and I see some of the times when I've taken on too much, it's because I have brought into my life people who are not governed by Yah's laws. If you look at Psalm 101, it's not in the notes. Read Psalm 101 and ask yourself, who are you letting close to you? If you're letting people get close, Psalm 101 tells you the recipe for that. Who do you let get in close to your life? Because all that junk in storage is evidence that I took on relationships where Yah's laws were not at play. Taking on too much. Summary. Yes, like Samson, you have likely taken on too much. That image there that was on page one, that was Samson and Delilah. Just say no, huh? Feelings like anxiety and resentment can only be used to get your attention. After all, you may simply be getting weary in well-doing, and we're not allowed to get weary in well-doing. But you can use those feelings to call for further analysis. Use your feelings to call for further investigation on these details. Use that list of practical symptoms to gauge and assess where you have fallen short. Focus on resolving issues of sin, broken commitments to people, and failed duties. Use that to direct your redemption. I was tempted to manufacture some matrix of balancing priorities and assessing what's important. Forget it. You look eye to eye with the people you let down, and you remember to look on their face. That'll give you all the motivation you need to set right priorities. As you rebuild, do not fall into the trap of new compromises. In other words, you can't, you know, like if you're trying to rebuild with your kids, you don't let them become tyrants, you know, and say, well, we want this and we want that, you know. Don't fall into the trap of compromises. And don't fall into the trap of impossible new commitments. Give it time and prayer for wisdom. Finally, your solutions and relationships must come under the commands of Yahshua and the laws of Yahweh. A few exceptions when I come up here, I speak about areas where I've achieved victory and know a lot. I have to admit, in the course of doing this, I found some of this material splashing off on me. And I'm sure some of it affects you. May Yahweh give you his grace, his provision, his mercy, and his Holy Spirit to put an end to this addiction to taking on too much. Thank you so much for your attention. Hallelujah.